Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Orale Heights. What did I just drop? I just dropped your PlayStation controller.
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
I have one, too, so I'm always cringing. I'm here at my guest this month's house. Please introduce yourself.
Woo-hoo. Welcome, Eric. This is Alessandro Negrete from Boyle Heights.
Yes. So thank you for inviting me to your home. I'm not going to lie. I was kind of hoping your dad would be here.
Oh, you know, a lot of people get disappointed. You know, I have these interesting experiences where people get scared because it's a bulldog.
Yeah.
And
it's
like,
it can be a bigger dog.
Yeah. But Venus, I would say he's a medium-sized dog. Super friendly, though. That's I think, what scares most people off is that he is one of those dogs that he's not violent, but he has no sense of personal space. He's a rescue. So I think that you know, impacts his social skills. But he will literally get up on your face and try and lick you. But super playful, non-violent at all. So I try and be mindful of that. Just, you know, I don't want to trigger people or scare them. So just because I'm also an advocate for pit bulls themselves, they have such a bad rap, but they're so friendly, so loving and loyal. So, you know.
I grew up with dogs like that too. Hold on. Let me stop this really quickly.
Check. Okay. All right. Damn it.
What was it?
It wasn't recording. It was just recording you.
Oh, so people are just going to hear me like, why is he talking about his dog?
Sometimes I'm not good about double checking everything today at the microphones. But yes, everybody, kind of awkward start there. Orale Heights coming at you from Alessandro's house here in the neighborhood. And yeah, I mean, we've known each other for a couple of years now. You do amazing work, you know, as an individual.
Oh, thank you.
And where you are gainfully employed at the moment as well, Eastern Ooh, Communities.
Yes, definitely. I, you know, 2016 was a pretty tough year for me.
For a lot of folks.
Oh, yeah. But in terms of employment, 2016 was definitely a rough year. But, thankfully, I'm at a happy place. I love my job. I love my team, and they're also super supportive. Mark was actually disappointed that we didn't go live yesterday. He was just like,
he wanted to listen.
So shout out to Mark for being super supportive.
Because we both posted it on social media, letting folks know. But as things tend to happen, that is why I have this mobile recording setup, is because, you know, our schedules are always like changing at the drop of a hat. So we have to like adapt and be able to like roll with it. So here we are on a beautiful Saturday at your house. We used to be neighbors too, like just up the street.
Yes.
So
very much so. I was always bugging, hey, you have this, hey, you have that. Always having some loud ass parties in front of my house.
I don't think I ever noticed.
Oh God, thank God. That makes me feel really good. Because one of the things you know, I used to struggle with was just like, am I doing this too late?
Am I annoying? Yeah.
Yeah. So thankfully.
No, I mean, I think the walls are pretty thick enough. And then, I mean, I was always watching TV or something or playing video games. Mm-hmm. So I had my own noise going on, or I was probably drunk or something. So
that's a thing.
But thanks again for giving me the time, for welcoming me into your space. We got a couple of things to talk about, but first, let's get to know you a little bit more.
For sure.
Like, where did you grow up?
So I won't give you all the long story, the one that I, you know, the one that they pay me to tell when I go to public speaking. But so I'm undocumented. Obviously, I'm queer. But my parents separated when I was 5. My mom used to work in the fields and stuff. So, we settled here in Boyle Heights in 1990. So technically, we've been here in the community since then. So I've definitely seen the. I went to local schools here. I went to First Street Elementary, Hollenbeck, graduated from Roosevelt.
What year?
2000.
Oh, just, 2 years before me.
Oh, I was gonna say like a long time ago. I barely made it to be a millennial.
Oh, like you're on the cusp.
Yeah. So we settled here in Boyle Heights. My mom actually had a conversation with us because we were used to being nomadic. Like, the sense of moving when we didn't move was so weird. So even when we settled in Boyle Heights, we would live in different apartment complexes. Mm. And we moved around a lot. But we moved here in 1990, came here. I left for just, you know, when I graduated, I was also coming to terms with my own identity, being queer and stuff. So I moved out of Boyle Heights, but my mom stayed here. But Boyle Heights was the only place that ever really felt like home. When I was, 19, 28, I lived on my own here in Boyle Heights. I got a studio, and I would walk up and down Cesar Chavez on Fridays and just buy, all the street vendors and buy a hot dog from this lady, tacos suaderos from another lady, buy a bootleg DVD from someone else, from all the street vendors, just go home Friday night and just
eat. You know, I do the same every once in a while to this day. It's, mostly, on days where, folks are getting paid, so, the middle of the month or, the beginning of the month, and it's just to watch everybody do their thing. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's a little bit about me growing up in Boyle Heights. It's genuinely one of the only community that felt like home. So when my mom moved away, I decided to stay here in Boyle Heights and been here ever since. And she came back, but again, I feel like we've, through one way or another, have always been here since 1990.
Yeah. And then was there family here that, y'all, were so-and-so's here, we should go over there?
No, actually. When my parents split up, my mom was, we moved around a lot. So when she got a job offer from one of the big, I don't know what they would call it, but it was one of the people that would buy the fruit, offered her a job at his storefront.
Oh.
Or not storefront, at his company. Because okay. My mom's always been really good with numbers, super good, to the point where her and my dad were together. My dad was able to save money to buy a house in Mexico. So she asked us and she found a house. We first lived in the projects. It took her a year to get us out of the projects, but we lived in the projects all on our own. While we were in Boyle Heights, that's how my mom actually started hustling to bring her family from Mexico. So she brought all my tias,
one by one.
We all live in I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, but it was at one point it was 12 of us in a one room house.
Yeah.
It was insane. I'll never forget those days. Oh, I don't know where we would wake up. I'm your uncle. the same thing. I don't think that'll ever stop with communities of color, because my uncle got married a couple of years ago and my mom was still living in LA. And I got to the wedding and she's like, Ven, I'm going to introduce you to your tia. So she's like, oh, and that's your tia. And that's your tia. Esa es tu tia también. I'm just like, okay, hi. And then, literally around. And then, so my mom's like, oh, espérate, te voy a traer comida. I'm going to go bring you food. And then this lady comes over and she's shaking my hand creo que soy tu tía. I'm like, okay, you think you're my cool. Nice to meet you. So I'm just I guess we're related to all these people.
That's cool, because my family had very similar experience, where each one was kind of helping the other move up, from Mexico moving up north. So when we lived in Mexico City, that was one stop where folks would always have a place to stay before they continued moving forward. And then, when we came over here, my family, we ended up staying with the same relatives that we helped stay. But, I think for us, it was just I'm sick of y'all. I don't ever want to talk to you ever again. It ended up on sour notes to the point where I don't even talk to my cousins or anybody because, I guess just family drama. So it's great to hear that your family at least is the opposite in terms of.
Well, I think Facebook has been that for my mom. She's used Facebook to connect with so many relatives that I didn't
keep in touch.
Yeah. I've always been the odd person out from my siblings and cousins. As I shared earlier, I'm queer. But I'm the only out queer person in my family that I know of. I don't know anybody else in my family that's queer. So it's definitely a weird experience. I remember growing up listening to my brothers definitely gravitated to what was the culture at the time. So they listened to Ice Cube
hip hop, rap.
Yeah. And so I didn't gravitate to that. I listened to alt rock and Green Day. So I was seen as weird by my siblings. And then, my dad remarried, and my siblings from my stepmom, they were also just why do you listen to that? Or Daria, before being Daria was cool. I was watching that when it was on the air and as they were developing the show. And my siblings would just be like, what are you watching? All these shows that back then were before their time. I wish they were coming back now. But not really, because then it'd be trendy.
It's not the same. Yeah. It's not the same.
But so that was just I always just spend a lot of time by myself. Not necessarily to avoid my family. It was just going through and learning about my identity was really just a long process. And it's still a long process. Though they live in Downey. I don't see them as often as, like, I see them at how I want to, which is one thing that I've, like, come to terms with. Like, I like being alone. So, it's nice.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the reason why I work toward having my own space. It's like, I can do what I want, when I want. And if I want you over, then I'll invite you over.
Except with my family, even when I invite them over, they're like, no, but you should come over here. It's easier. I'm just like,
because there's one of you, and I'm assuming with them, there's like multiple of them.
Oh, yeah. I have.
Like, let's get the caravan together.
Yeah, because it's four siblings. It's my twins, the oldest of the girls, and my baby brother. And all of them got kids, except one of the twins. The other twin just got pregnant. So it's Eddie, Charlie, Andrew, Joseph. So, like, then all my nephews, and then it's my dad and my mom.
I had all my nieces at my house once, and I was like, what is going on? There was five of them. So they were all just running around each other. Like,
that was one of the main reasons I got the PlayStation, to be quite honest with you. For me, like, I love playing video games, but it was something that I wanted to build that, like, a lot of cultural things I feel are dying with me, like a lot of cultural practices. I'm very grateful for Coco, the movie, because now my family is starting to practice Dia de los Muertos. This last Dia de los Muertos I just passed was the first time my family built an altar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's something that I do every year. I have one in the office at East Yard. I had it last year. I do one outside.
Yeah, you're more intentional
about the work. You know, our cultural practices to me are really important. So I really was feeling that a lot of that was going to die with me. So I would come bring them over. I'd take them to festivals. Like, I talked to them about the different santos and things that I have here. But they'd be coming for the PlayStation because I would let them play PlayStation unlimitedly, where with my sister, she's like, you can play for an hour. And so for me, it was like, yeah, it's a bonding experience, even if it is through video.
You're the
game.
Fun uncle, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. Here's a PlayStation.
But now they're teenagers, and I remember me and my sister had this conversation recently where the oldest of my nephews is like, I'm too old to hang out with you guys. And me and my sister were like, shooketh.
He did not. Like, how old are they?
He's 15. He has a girlfriend now.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. But still, or 13, I think. Yeah, 13. And I'm just like, man, what do you mean you're too cool? Screw you then. But he's kind of like, he's kind of geeky and nerdy. He's into tech. Like, he has more YouTube followers than I do. And
what does he do on YouTube? Do you know?
Plays video games.
Okay, all right. So I was just having that conversation yesterday with Nico and his kids, like, doing the same thing. Like, youth today, I mean, obviously not all youth, but a lot of them are, you know, if they're playing video games, they're like, their other hand is tied to YouTube, either watching it or like being proactive. Oh,
yeah,
but with
that also, you know, as someone that does tech and comms, like, also being aware of like cyber predators and things like that, like, I actually went through his whole thing and I linked his YouTube account to my email, and every time he has like someone new at him, because he'll be playing like shirtless and stuff, and you know, there's people out there that,
oh, he's streaming too.
Yeah, he streams, yeah, sometimes. So I'm just like, don't do that, like, not delete stuff. And he gets
like
mad.
He doesn't think twice about that. No. I'm at home playing, I'm comfortable.
Yeah, and I definitely don't want to tell my sister how to parent. So, like, I just tell her to be careful with, like, what he posts. And so we have those intentional conversations, but it's something that we've been meaning to talk to my nephews about, just, like, what they post.
Damn. Oh, man, that trips me out. I mean, all of my nieces are still, like, five and younger, so I haven't, like, dipped my toes into that, like.
Yeah. I mean, they know I'm queer. They're super fun and open with it. Like, you know, it was rough coming out, but I think it was more rough because of me. Mm-hmm. I think I, you know, the only exposure I had to queer people was through TV, and it was through a very white gaze, white lens.
Very pop culture, yeah.
Yeah, so as a person of color, like, I didn't have a lot of, and being the only out person in my family, like, I don't know anyone before me. And so then coming out to, like, my sisters were super supportive. I definitely built that internal support system before I came out to my dad and mom. Mm. I even told my stepmom before I told my dad and mom, because me and my stepmom are really close. And everybody's just like, it's gonna be okay. I'm like, I hope so. And you know, at the time I was doing some work at Bienestar through their Sabores program, which is a YMSM young peer health peer group. And I realized in my time there that I thought I had it bad just because I'm so family oriented. So that my, like, the worst that I got is like my mom and dad didn't talk to me for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Like, at the worst. But then working at Bienestar, like, I had one of my teens at the time, like, her dad was beating her every day because she was a young queer woman, you know, for like a whole week she went through it. And like, those are the moments that I really reflect on, like, my growth around understanding different narratives.
Yeah.
And just how easy I had it, you know? I'm like, oh my God, my dad didn't talk to me for 2 weeks. Gets emo hair. You
know? No, I mean, I think we all go through that experience where, like, you know, you're on your own. And like you said, you didn't have anywhere else where you were, like, seeing it. You're not being represented, you know, fully. And to hear it from other folks and they have it so much worse, it's really, like, it puts everything into perspective. Mm-hmm. Damn. So how old were you
when I came out?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I think when I came out to myself, I was 17. Like, that's when I fully accepted, like, this is part of who I am. Like, even if it was from my understanding of what I got from pop culture. Mm-hmm. But I came out to my parents when I was 22,
early 20s.
Yeah, early 20s. I'm like, my mind's fading me right now. Yeah, so I came around, yeah, like my early 20s.
Okay. So, I mean, with y'all living in the PJs and living in Ball Heights at one of the times when there was, like, the height of, like, gang violence and, like, all the, like, Vida Loca stuff, like, was that some of that, like, impacted your, like, family life too? Like, with all the gangs and everything that's going on?
You know what? My mom, because of the shit that she... Can I curse on your
video? This is the internet. You can say whatever you want.
Oh, are you going to censor me, Eric? You know, my mom went through some stuff, so she definitely was always really good at, like, being a strong woman. Mm. Unfortunately, because of... I mean, fortunately, she was a strong woman, but unfortunately, the circumstances that led her to be that strong. So she was always really good at also, like, nurturing folks. So when we got out of the project and we moved to this this apartment complex, it was like most, I would say, about out of the 12 apartment numbers that there were in the building, about 8 of them were filled with, like, gang families from the local gang that were there. And they all came to respect my mom because she was a single mother. She was a hustler. She would feed some of them. Like, in the beginning, when we first got out of the project, living in the project wasn't bad. It was actually getting out when we moved into that particular apartment complex that got a bit difficult. But at one point, like, the gangsters used to be like, hey, where's Loner? And they used to call my mom Loner because she didn't fuck with anybody in the hood. She didn't talk to her. Yeah, she was very serious. And they eventually were also looking out for us. Like, they made sure that nothing happened to us because we were, you know, latchkey kids. Like, yeah. My mom would go to work and she would work nighttime. And I would take care of my brothers. But, you know, the local, you know, community, I mean, our concept of gangs was very different just because we never got messed with. You know, even like though my brother got into some trouble, like, we never experienced that, like, hyper violence. Like, I remember I tell this story often. My dad used to talk so much shit about, like, my mom moving us to Boyle Heights. And I remember I telling him, like, you talk so much shit about Boyle Heights because he grew up, I feel like my parents used the 5 as a divider. My dad stayed in, like, Southeast LA. So, okay. Like, Maywood, right. Bell Gardens, and then further east. And, the first time I saw a body was behind his house at the riverfront, right there by where, like, right behind, because he lived right next to the river. Like, you walked to the back of his house, the river was there.
Wow.
Yeah. The first time I experienced a shootout was, like, right in front of me, was at his house. Dang. I never saw that in Boyle Heights. I mean, you heard them, obviously.
And, like, it still kind of happens every still once kinda in happens. A while.
Yeah, but I never visually saw it. Like, I was coming home from school being dragged off by one of my friends and literally, like, just saw it in front of my dad's house. I was just like, stop. Like, I told him, you need to stop. Like, my house is right where that's happening. So, like, it was scary. And, like, I remember getting out of the car and smelling
like the gun smoke.
Yeah, the gun smoke, blood on the floor. Yeah, it's crazy.
That's intense.
Yeah. So I have mad love for Boyle Heights. So I'm just like, people talk shit, but I'm like, I saw crazier shit outside of Boyle Heights. So
it's like Southeast LA don't play.
Yeah, so they do not. Babies want babies.
Yeah. No, I mean, maybe part of that is because it's like, oh, you're from, like, over there. Oh, I'm from over here. Kind of differences. Yeah. But was there something that you remember that you loved about growing up in the neighborhood? Like, obviously, like, you're making, like, these communities and, like, family, like, surrogate families wherever y'all are at, like, in these apartment buildings, which tends to happen because we have to look for each other, look out for each other.
Yeah, I think, honestly, if there's one thing that I had to point at is that it's the social networks. Like, now, as an adult and, like, facing the issues that are affecting Boyle Heights, it's that. It's those social networks. Like, there were a few times my mom would have to tell our neighbor to watch over us and things like that. And, you know, I really...
It's like, hey, I'm going to come home late.
Yeah, because I remember, like, that's where, for me, a lot of my approach to my neighbors comes from. Like, when I moved here, like... Because, you know, living where we used to live, like, we were definitely separated. Like, we never had the Jehovah's Witnesses come out and knock and none of that. So, but living here now, like, right on the street.
They just come all the time.
They come all the time. But I definitely went next door and introduced myself because I have one of those, what do you call it? Like, they cook randomly and, like, people show up to eat birria.
Oh.
And I was just like, why don't I get invited, you know? And so I went and introduced myself, and they still didn't invite me. So apparently they thought that I was some, like, white guy that, like, moved next door and was going to throw rata. I'm like, no. Like, I love birria. What are you talking
about? Yo hablo español.
Okay. Yo Nintendo. Yeah, no. I definitely had to, like, work up to getting invited. But now, like, every once in a while when they still do it, like, they'll come knock or the señora's like, oh, mijo, ¿quieres un plato? So it's, again, it's, like, the community that's built because, you know, like I mentioned, my mom brought out her siblings here. And so our tios and tias were the neighbors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, like, those were the folks that we were, like, gravitating to, like, have parties with or things like that until my mom's actual family came here.
No, I'm not going to lie. I don't do that anymore. Like, the parking wars... And, like, being petty and my neighbors being petty have left me, like, super mad at everybody.
I think that I don't go through that because I have parking. So I don't know that parking struggle anymore. But I will say that does get real, especially as gentrification has definitely impacted the community. There's this woman, she actually recently moved out, and I'm pretty sure it was that the community wasn't welcoming. She had an accent that sounded like she might have been from Australia or England.
Oh.
And one day she parked incorrectly. So her, and you know, I live on a hill. So without giving too much about my address, but I live in a place where it's like, it's difficult to park.
There's an incline.
Yeah. So she gets out of her house and is like in her car and just starts honking. And she's like, whose car is it? Whose car? And like cursing at the neighborhood, at everybody.
Who fucking?
I knew whose car it was, but she comes over to my house. Like, is that your car? And I'm like, and I told him, like, you know what? I'm like, you've seen me around here, first of all. You know that's not my car. If you would have built community here, you would know whose car that is.
Nicely,
And so I knew whose car it was. So I went over, and they're like, oh yeah, like I can move it, but she's the person of color. That, but she didn't have to scream like that at everybody. You know, so it's like, and so she literally moved. I would say 2-3 months after that happened, and I'm just like, that's rude. You know,
that's entitlement too. I think that's part of the reason. Like, I mean, again, not giving too much details of where you live, but there's like some folks up the hill too. That's like the Genty Francis. We saw the listing online for the places for rent. It's like $2,500 for a 2-bedroom. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like a year contract too, and you pay all the utilities.
Yeah, and I've been in this particular community for now going on 6 years. So. I've seen, you know, you've seen those like that.
Before they look like that.
They look like that. Like there was people of color living there. And now, like, you know, I have a dog too, but it's like this white couple with this boxer. And
that dog is funny. It always looks at me through the holes in the fence.
Yeah. So I'm just like, you know, but I totally hear you about, that's one of, in the neighborhood council, one of the biggest issues. Even my friends that live here.
Parking.
When are you going to fix parking? I'm like, I'm working on it. You know, that's something that I mean, that has been something that I'm intentional about because I was the chair before of transportation and environment. So I felt like that was a way. And I definitely created 3 plans. I'm not a planner, but I presented 3 options of the ways the city can mitigate the impacts of the lack of parking here. I mean, one day when you and I were still neighbors, like they just came and expanded the red zones like that were on the corners, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of people, those were like safe havens in the middle of the night, like, oh, coming home and parking when I was looking for street parking. Then one day I'm just like, oh shit, it's red. And that, so just like looking at that, like we were looking at T zones where like you have to be within this space, because you know some people be double parking.
They do that on purpose.
Yeah, of course they do.
They either do it because they're trying to save parking for somebody else in their household, or they're just dicks.
Yeah, I actually, when I have friends come over, like I'll go out and save them parking because I have parking, but I'll be mad for my friend. I'm like, dude, that dude's an asshole. He's like totally double or triple parking.
It's like, you got a big enough truck, you don't need to be doing that.
Yeah. So I'm just like, that's an asshole. So, but I'm very fortunate to not have the parking struggle.
I've been tempted to get like Post-it stickers that say you're an asshole parking and just put it on people's cars.
I support that.
Oh man, parking. But let me like. I mean, you're getting a little into what we're going to talk about with the neighborhood council here in Bull mm-hmm. Heights, but with like this whole thing about housing, let's talk about this incident that you had recently.
Yeah.
So, like you were saying right now, you know, when you moved here to this current spot you're in, you're introducing yourself to folks, and they weren't the most necessarily welcoming because they didn't know you. Mm-hmm. They saw you, you're like how you are, and they're like, ah, shit. Here comes Whitey over here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm reaching or you know, but there's this concept or idea of what a gentrifier might look like.
It's a very stereotypical like view of like they have these kind of pants or dress this kind of way,
yeah.
or they have like visual like tattoos and like, you know, certain body parts or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, it's even like down to like a specific haircut.
Mm-hmm.
So
I do not have a man bun. For those of you listening, I do not have a man bun.
It turns out I have one now. I just don't do that in public. I either wear a hat or I just take it off. But like, let tell folks what happened.
Yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, I am co-parenting my dog with my friend, and she has a husky. Her and her partner have a husky, and I have a pit bull. You know, beautiful dogs. If you do not follow him on Instagram, you're doing yourself a disservice. My dog loves the camera. But yes, I was walking them, and I usually I walk them over the bridges. You know, I go down 4th Street.
So like going west.
West into the arts district and come in. And a couple of times I have had people like yell gentrifier, hipster, you know.
It was more than once.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the first time that I had something thrown at me. So recently.
Because I've seen you on those walks too. Yeah. Like going like somewhere and they'll be like, hey, what's up, y'all?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm definitely like when people see me or honk, I try and like see them because obviously y'all are in traffic, so you should be paying attention. But you know, like my friend Mitzi also saw me. She's like, oh, I saw you in Venus. I was just like, oh, she's like, I was honking. I was like, I try to wave. So I definitely try and be welcoming. But recently, just also wanting to explore the neighborhood, I wanted to go
walking
to the park.
Is a great
yeah.
way
to do it. So I went to, because I always feel like we have a couple of parks here in Boyle Heights, but the maintenance that is offered by the city is not the best. So, you know, just also wanting to observe, like, what are some things that I can bring up through Public Works and to the council members.
As a representative of the neighborhood council.
So, and you know, Hollenbeck Park always has some particular smell, but so I've been recently exploring the park and also just being mindful of how we're supporting the houseless community. But, you know, back to what happened. So I've been walking my dog at Hollenbeck Park now, I think, for the past 2 months. And I was coming back with my dog and my friend's dog. And as we're crossing the street, there's a freeway entrance. And someone yelled out, gentrifier, and threw a bottle.
So you're crossing the street on, like, 4th and Cummings.
On 4th and Cummings, yes. I was, like, right next to the gas station. And someone was going into the freeway. And they threw a bottle. And I was just like, oh, snap. Like, oh, what the
hell? They didn't hit you, though.
No. It did not hit me, thankfully. They had a horrible aim. They did not hit the dogs. They must not have been from around here or a Dodger fan. Because they couldn't even, like, I mean, it didn't get relatively close. But, like, I definitely took what I took from it was just like, okay, this is interesting.
And these were folks of color who did that?
I'm assuming they were literally, like, jumping on the freeway.
So you're like, it was just like, vroom.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was just like, oh, wait, what?
So, I mean, and I brought that up because you posted that on Facebook. And, like, one of the things I said was, like, I'm, like, glad you and the dogs are safe overall. But then, you know, you were kind of reflecting on that for a little bit. Like, what were you chewing on there?
You know, a lot of times there's been things around, like, I understand my place in the world. Like, there's earned privilege and then there's worked privilege. And so I can't help the fact that I'm the, like, a light-skinned Latino. I can't help that I'm a man. But I was really reflecting on, like, is it colorism? Is it, like, this concept of a stereotypical view of a gentrifier that could also, like, I've heard it in jokes, too. Like, are they gay or are they a gentrifier? Are they gay or a hipster, you know? So, you know, I was...
It's dangerous to be very fashionable these days.
So, and the thing that tripped me out is, like, that particular day I was wearing one of those school, not prison shirts.
Okay. From the endowment.
And
did you have cut off jean shorts?
No, I did not, but I had short basketball shorts, like, above my knee.
Okay.
And
like showing a little pierna.
Yeah, showing a little leg, you know. but the dogs, someone was just like, your dogs had that. I don't remember if my dogs had their handkerchiefs on them.
Oh, like little bandanas around their neck. I used to do that too.
So just like, you know, so what I was reflecting on, like, is this idea of gentrification, like, now just across the board, like, what was it about me? Just because I like to be aware of my surroundings.
Of course.
So just being even more hyper aware of, like, okay, maybe I shouldn't have done this, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Reflecting, like, what did I do that might have, like, triggered somebody or something?
Yeah, because I definitely, I mean, I as I mentioned in that same post, like, I stand with community response to, like, being attacked. So gentrification is an attack on community. So I'm all for it. You know, I was more reflecting, not necessarily on the action, but myself, like, what about me made that person feel?
The way I look, the way I'm dressing. Yeah. I mean, I literally had an episode of this, and I think I might have mentioned this on another show, when I was in New York for the first time. So for me in the summer, like, my uniform is a t-shirt and cut off Dickies that are, like, above the knee. So I was in Williamsburg walking around, and I saw this guy, like, dressed almost to the T, the same as me, and I was like, what the hell? I was like, here I am, like, I you know, to me, that's just my lazy uniform of, like, cut off jeans, because I have, like, a process where, like, once the jeans are, like, going out the door, I turn them into shorts, and I'm always wearing t-shirts. So I was like, dang. And like, even the haircut I had at the time too was like, I'm just, like, out here really, like, living my best hipster life.
I mean, I'm much like you. I and it was a joke at my office. Like, I wear, after I'm home from work, it's basketball and cutoff shirts.
Yeah, you know, like, you want to, like, chill out.
Yeah, especially, like, over the summer, I would run with my dog. So as it got cooler, I would stop running. I would just, like, start walking. But, man, that was my uniform over the summer. There was not a moment where anybody that saw me in the summer, if I wasn't going somewhere and I was just home, basketball shorts and a cut up shirt.
Yep.
That was it. If you follow my Instagram, that's what I was wearing.
Oh, man. But I mean, I've been guilty of that too, where, like, I see, especially, like, when I'm going home, going east, and I see people at least I love, and I'll just, like, yell out the window, hipsters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm not out there throwing bottles at people. That's a whole nother level. But no, I mean, I totally feel you on that. I think I've had, like, ongoing discussions with folks about that, not just in appearance, but also, like, our own personal habits of where we decide to spend our money.
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit about that with, like, the neighborhood chisme of, like, you know, who isn't honoring boycotts and what that means, mm-hmm. and, like, call out culture. So for me, I mean, obviously just being very mindful of, like, you know, if a supermarket or a specific place is being boycotted, because, like, more of the traditional boycotts where it's like labor and it's like folks, you know, fighting for improvements in their working place, better wages, things like that, kind of like the way the teachers are almost into like strike mode for. And now you have, like, this community boycotts where it's like, don't go to that place because, you know, they're not doing something right, or don't go to this place because of this and that. So I think, yeah, like we were talking before too, before we started recording, there's this heightened sense of anxiety that you don't want to be called out for, like, thinking that, oh, I'm over here just eating chilaquiles at Kitchen Mouse, when, like, somebody finds out and puts that picture online and they're like, oh, look at Eric over here eating hipster chilaquiles, which, I'll be honest, I've been there before and they're delicious.
Yeah, I've never been to that restaurant, but
it's in Highland Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part, I don't like eating out. I prefer to cook just because I'm
cheap. You save money,
I'm all super cheap, and for the amount that it would cost me to buy those chilaquiles, I could probably have chilaquiles the whole day.
Oh, we pretty much.
But you know, it is. We're living in an interesting time where Again, I stand around community response. I think that there's multiple strategies, and that's one. That's not necessarily one that I adhere to. I respect the boycott. I am all for solidarity, mm-hmm. but you know, I also know that I approach things from a form of compassion. I try and be as empathetic, you know. Going through nonviolent compassion and communication trainings has also helped me shape a lot of my approaches, especially in community. A lot of times, you know, I think we're very privileged in our youth to be able to have that language. But, you know, in those situations, like when to our parents, so for example, I'll use my mom for as an example. I took her to Earth Cafe for the first time.
Is the one in downtown?
The one right here, yeah. Literally in the arts district. And after I took her there, she was all about it. And she's like, ¿cuándo vamos a ir otra vez?
It's good food, you know. I mean, it's more it's the expensive. Bland.
Some of their food, I mean, I love their
I usually get anything that has chile, that's why.
Oh, okay. No, the only thing I really like from there is their bread pudding. But I took my mom there and I explained to her, like, you know, the differences between this place and like going to a corporation. But to a lot of our elders, like a lot of these things also, because they grew up really poor, are symbols of status.
Yeah.
So to my mom to have, like, she would even save her little cup, like, oh, fui a este café, blah, 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 right?
Just to like let folks know.
Yeah. So I think that there's like, it's a layered issue. And I think that for myself, I think I personally practice call-in culture because I think that, again, a lot of times we're all constantly learning,
yeah, right?
And we can't be expected to be experts in everything. And even being an expert in community, that's like something that to me is nuance, understanding like the different dynamics. And so, you know, I definitely respect and honor the boycotts. Like when I walk Venus, I see all the galleries and it is upsetting. And now through the neighborhood council, one of our council members, they live around the galleries, and you know, they express that like their mom walks around the galleries and someone once from the gallery screamed out illegal to her.
What the hell?
And so I definitely, like, again, I'm very much against that. And so when people talk to me about, you know, the neighborhood council, and I know we're going to get into it in a little bit, like there's a lot of things that I could advocate for and say yes to when developers come in and present to us. But for me, the moment that I advocate for something for myself, then that's not the moment. I'm not representing community at that moment. You know, Boyle Heights has over 100,000 residents, and public laundromats are about 5 or 6 in Boyle Heights that I've seen. And that's definitely not enough. And if you're talking about grocery stores that have quality food, mm-hmm. I think none of them. You know, we have Food for Less or we have Northgate.
Wait, Food for Less is all about that 10 for 10 special.
Yeah.
Soda, Gatorade.
Yeah, all of that. You know, so I think that those are the things that I look out for. And we constantly get a bunch of places asking for expansions of their liquor license or for additions of liquor license. And
which is like the Cav hard liquor.
Yeah, thankfully, the neighborhood council, since before I was on it, has had a strict no more liquor licenses. So we haven't in the 3 years that now I'm going to be on there, we have not approved a new liquor license.
Yeah. That's why, like, if you've been in the neighborhood, the only new bars that have been coming around are like basically just from one bar to another, switching owners, switching brands, switching names. Like the newest one is where the M Bar used to be, is Chelas.
Yeah, Chelas. Yeah. So we, you know, we do see that a lot of businesses are now shifting or changing name, but we do not.
It's like, nah. You know,
we were recently in a situation where if folks were from here before, there was La Serenata. Now it's Casa Fina.
Casa Fina with Josefina Lopez.
Yeah, who is a great community advocate. And
she has her community theater. Does all this stuff.
Casa 0101, Real Women Have Curves, right? So they've done a lot of work in community. But Casa Fina, much like Serenata, only has a beer and wine license, right? And so they came in asking for an expansion, and then an expansion of hours, and an addition of different things. And, you know, I struggled with it because I support her as an individual. I would want to see Casa Fina survive. But for me, what that said is we set precedents. And so does this community, would supporting community look like this, or what does the community really need, you know?
Does it need another place to get drunk?
Yeah, so, you know, in the end, we just recommended that they go back and readjust their plan, and they're hopefully they come back But those are the things that really stick with me because, you know, I go to Casa Fina. I think their prices are relatively accessible. But, you know, alcohol definitely brings a different environment, especially when you have First Street across the street. We have La Paloma. Next to it is Chela.
East Side Love.
So I'm just like, is this a corridor now? You know, and if we're constantly asking people not to gentrify, like, then what clientele are you trying to bring into, right? So it's a layered issue, and I think that it gets muggy and it gets difficult, and I think that that's one of the things that I told her. Like, I spoke to her on the side. I'm like, look, you would benefit from doing some community outreach. Like, what if, you know, what would bring is if you did other things that would benefit community. I know your prices are, like, they have Taco Tuesdays. Tacos are really good, and they're $1.
They have lunch specials.
Yeah. So, it's accessible. So I told her, maybe alcohol isn't what you need. Maybe you think it's alcohol because we have this assumption that consumption is what people are going to do. But, you know, maybe it's something else.
No, I feel you on that because... Yeah, I think there's only two places left in the Olive Bowl Heights that have like a full-on liquor license, which is that Wing and Beer place that's on across the street from the Soto Station, which used to be Tenno Sushi.
Yes.
And then before that, like a Mexican restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then further down the street on First Street, over by Evergreen, the Mariscos place, mm-hmm. which is, if you ever go there on a Friday, that's like super hardcore. I bring my own mixtape karaoke. Like, people don't play.
I've been there, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So those are the things that I definitely consider when I think about what are the community interests, what are the community needs.
What's the greater good? Yeah.
And it's hard because, you know, you also, you know, people might not see it, but, you know, in the neighborhood councils, like, developers do try and sway our vote. Like, oh, yeah, you can come in and get discounts and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, wow, like that.
Yeah, that, what was that one that was on Boyle that recently closed down? That they were also getting protests because the owner was aligned with the views of Trump.
Oh, Asher Cafe?
Asher. That guy came in and it was like legit. Like,
right, what was he asking for, though?
He wanted...
Or what was he asking for support on?
I think he wanted a liquor license.
También.
And he wanted approval of the cafe. Because before Asher Cafe was built, he had another business.
It's right across the street from it. It's a textile business.
Yeah, so he wanted approval for the restaurant. And I voted against it just because a lot of things, you know, they sound pretty, but there's no accountability. There's no way for me to go hold him accountable,
mm-hmm.
you know, around local hire and things like that.
They just say they'll do that.
Yeah, of course. And, you know... Those were the things that, again, like, I'm not okay with it. Like, do we need another coffee shop? Right? Like, I actually just recently found this thing called Lucky Wheels Cafe right here on Mission Road in between Chavez and First. It's a new, like, bike repair shop. And
that's right where all the warehouses are at.
Yeah, so if you walk by there, and I just recently found it because I was
walking. Like the Pato plant, too.
Yes, it's, I would say, about 300, 400 feet from El Pato.
Oh, but it smells like duck sauce all the time.
it smells like something.
It's vinegary and smell.
So they have a coffee shop there. I'm just like, how much coffee do really people need to consume?
That's like all right, we can't have booze. All right, let's go get...
Coffee.
Caffeinated. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, because we're already getting into neighborhood council stuff. Yeah. I did want to ask you, like, how did you get involved with, like, the immigrant rights movement? Of course, you know, being undocumented is one of them.
So before I was doing immigrant rights work, you know, I grew up pre-undocumented and unafraid, pre-DACA, pre-all that.
Pre-DREAM Act.
Pre-DREAM Act, pre-all of that.
And so you graduated 2 years before AB 540.
Yeah, so I grew up in a time where you don't talk about your undocumented status. Like, that's not a thing. You never bring it up. Just stay quiet.
You fake it.
So I didn't have to deal with my undocumented identity per se until after. So what I first had to struggle with was my queer identity. Like, I didn't know who to talk to about it. So it wasn't until I graduated high school and I started, you know, looking up clubs and trying to find spaces, again, living in Boyle Heights, and I found this place called Bienestar. They had their youth group, and And I started going there and volunteering just because, like, you know, like, now I found a place that I saw myself. It was, a, you know, a, it's a primarily Latinx serving institution. But I saw myself reflected. I saw, and so I was super active, helped them, like, went to a bunch of their events. And
just, like,
yeah, got involved in there. Yeah, so through them, and just because of my inclination around, like, wanting to make things better for our community and being able to share my narrative around being queer in public spaces. I went to LGBTQ advocacy days in Sacramento, which, much like Immigrant Rights Day, like,
they go lobby, talk to folks. Yeah,
so I went a couple of years, and but, you know, then the whole AB 540 thing started coming up. So, you know, really dealing with the intersection of, like, the second closet, because I'm light skinned and my accent isn't as heavy, a lot of people just always assume that I'm a citizen or that I have some sort of status, and I never really debunked those myths, because, again, I still just, like, can I tell you? Can I not tell you? You know, like, I'm gonna let you think, like, you can't say that I didn't tell you, because I, you know, we never talked about it. So that was something that I struggled with. But the more I did immigrant LGBTQ work, I started seeing that intersection, especially going up there, because a lot of the things that you talk about or you learn about when you're doing advocacy is, like, voting. And I'm just like, well, I can't vote, but I'm out here, like, you know, living my best advocate life. And so I definitely started, like, really mulling that over. And then so the California Dream Act started, a lot of the, like, movement around immigrant rights. I mean, my mom was always also really political, so she took us to marches on, like, against 187.
Oh, wow.
I was organizing in high school around Prop 21. So, I mean, activism was something that...
It wasn't, you know, new to you completely.
No, not completely. As it related to me, you know, Prop 21, if folks don't remember, was the proposition back in 1990, the late 90s, early 2000s, where they wanted to try young adults as adults. Right. And so my brother had gotten into some trouble, and I started just reflecting, like, if this passes, my brother's going to be tried as an adult and he's going to get some hard time. And this is specifically targeting communities of color, youth of color, young men of color. So we started organizing around that. But back then I wasn't trying to deal with my queer identity. I'm like, nah, I'm not gay. I'll figure that out once I'm out of high school, when I'm not forced to see these people. But it was through my LGBTQ organizing as well that I got to meet a lot more undocumented people and that were also queer. And so we started having those conversations around, like, the double closet, and then, you know, just getting connected to, I was part of one of the first LGBT contingents for May Day, you know, back when May Day wasn't, like, sponsored by multiple organizations, when it was actually meaningful.
When it was still going down Broadway.
Yeah, when it was still going down Broadway. And that's how I met Jonathan and some of the folks from IYC. And, you know, I never was part of a dream team, but I always heard about the different narratives that were told, and I gravitated towards IYC because even though my brothers weren't undocumented, I always think about, like, people like my mom that are being left out. And at the time, you know, politicians really played a great job at putting young immigrant youth against each other. Like, oh, you should believe if you're I was that model immigrant. Like, I was a dreamer.
You're doing everything right.
I was doing everything right. I'm out here doing politics and civic engagement. Yeah,
GPAs.
You know, but that was also not a narrative that I felt, like, was fitting to me. I was just like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to have to, like, choose me over my mom. Like, that's never something that I wanted to do. So it was really through, like, those multiple experiences of, like, I felt that I was a good youth, but my activism was never just for me. Like, my activism has always been rooted in, like, my surroundings, you know, like, my neighbors, like, they would come to me for homework. So a lot of times when I was thinking of Prop 21, you know, I did my best to be a good kid just because I was undocumented. So I was just like, I don't want any attention on me. So when I was...
It does help you keep you in line, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Because, like, the first thing your mom... Si no te portas bien, te van a deportar.
Ahí viene la migra.
Ahí viene la migra. So I tried to do everything by the books, and I was, like, a straight-edge kid. Then I got into my 30s and everything went down the river. Catch me on the weekend. But yeah, so we definitely, I definitely, like, a lot of my organizing and activism was always involved in that space of the, those around me.
Yeah, very grounded in community.
Grounded in community. You know, much like it is in neighborhood council, there's plenty of things that I could advocate for. Or people would be like, I won't name names, but one of a friend of mine was just like, hey, like, if there's ever a music studio that comes in and wants to be in Boyle Heights, you should approve it. I'm like, hell no. He's like, but I don't want to have to go somewhere far to record this to an album. I'm like, nope.
Well, there's a rehearsal space now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, like, even then, that used to be like an old tire shop. So yeah. It's like I think they're making, like, I mean, I think I was talking to somebody else too. It's like, man, I don't like that. But then I'm not a musician, so I don't necessarily see like the value of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, a lot of these things would always come for if there's a community benefit or if there's a way to have community participate in that space, then we should have that conversation. We shouldn't shy away from it. Recently, I was invited to, one of the, there's this building on Mission Road as well, and it's an architect studio.
It's not SciArc, is it?
No. It's in Boyle Heights, actually.
All right, so the other side of the river.
The other side of the river, and I got to meet the mujer that is in charge of it, and you see that space on the inside, and the first thing you would think is like, oh, God, this is a gentry space.
It's like very sterile, clean.
Yeah, and has one of those like alternative gardens that, like, you know, for the employees to go and relax their mind, stimulate, right? As I roll my eyes, but you know, she was just like, "Hey, like, everyone's talking about how you're from here and blah blah blah." It's like, you know, I'd love to have salsa classes and like open up the space to community.
Okay.
So I was just, you know, I listened, and but the first thing that comes to mind is like, you know, much like the protests are going on, would this be something that would be protested, right? And so it's something that I'm still thinking about, like, I would love to have community have access to the space too, because when I also think about what that space would do is a social engineering that we're exposed to. Like, when we're youth, what are the jobs we're exposed to? You're either a teacher, a cop, a lawyer, or a doctor, because that's also what you see on TV.
Yeah.
Right? We don't teach our kids, like, you can be a politician or you can be an engineer, an architect. So I also think about how spaces like that could also be beneficial in the social engineering of a youth. Like, what if, like, there's this kid that just loves to play with Legos, but he doesn't know what to do with that energy or that thought, because subconsciously he's just like, well, these are Legos.
You're not going to do anything with that. Yeah. Not if you're going to be a cop.
Right. So there's a lot of things that I think that we can mull over and have deeper conversations, but it's also like, I also always stick to like, well, you know, maybe this also class isn't what the community needs, but at least this person is.
You're on the right path. They're like, okay, you're being like, how can we bring in folks from the neighborhood in here? Yeah. Maybe not with salsa, but.
Or maybe, I don't know, right?
Different kind of salsa.
There we go. I'm all for having some more salsa.
Oh man. All right. Well, I mean, let's get into it, because we're already an hour into this, and this is a big part of why I wanted to like have you on the show, because like we were talking before, you are running for re-election.
Yes.
And do you have a specific title on that council?
No. So we have we're a general board, and then within the general board we get chosen to be executive board members or chairs of a committee. And so my first year, I was asked to join by a really good friend of mine. And when he approached me, I was just like, hey, fool. I'm like, I don't know if you know, but I'm undocumented. I don't know if I can run. I don't know what that means.
Politics. Yeah.
You know? And he's just like, let me find out. Sure enough, he messaged me the next day. He's like, yeah, you can run. He's like, I'd love to have you. Like,
it's super active. It's not a paying position.
No, it's not a paying position, but it is an elected position. It's weird. So he came at me, and I was just like, really? And at the time, I was just like, sure, I'll do it, right? And
I'll give it the college try.
Oh, yeah, like, okay. And so I ran, and like the first year that I was there, I was voted into the executive chair of outreach. And that year, we were actually, we were recognized, a lot of the work that we were doing by Assemblymember Rendon for our involvement in the Boyle Heights 5K. Right there, I'm pointing at the
cleanup picture.
The clean streets, yeah. So we also won an award, and I was the one that initiated the year that I was in it.
Like
so
the neighborhood Saturday cleanup.
The neighborhood. No, the city of LA has this clean streets challenge. Oh. So you actually compete against other neighborhood councils or other nonprofits and around. Within that, there's like three different things, like the most streets cleaned, but also the most people registered to 311. And we won because I was like really busting my ass to get people to register and download the app, the
311 app, the city app,
because you know, one of the great things that I've learned is that we pay so much money.
Oh my God. Half my DWP is for trash.
Yeah. So we pay so much money that a lot of people don't see that, like, you know how we see a lot of bulky items like that? Now, after going through that particular challenge, pisses me so much off because I'm just like, you can literally call it in and someone will come pick it up. Like,
or you can go in the app and post the picture, the address.
Yes. And so I'm just like, I'll pull over and take pictures of like a bunch of like bulky items that I see on my way to work. But so we won an award because I got a lot of people registered to download the app. And so that was my first year. The second year was a bit rough just because I had just transitioned into a new job. I had had a rough 2016 in terms of work. But I was a transportation and environment chair that year. And it was kind of difficult just because I was also learning a lot about the environment, and which is great, but it definitely gave me a lot less time to organize like the meetings, because one of our bylaws is you have to have at least three meetings. If you don't have a third meeting, then you're off. But I definitely provide a lot of support to our current transportation and environment chair, Veronica, just because of my position at work and our involvement.
Like you have more insider knowledge.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so those are, we hold a term for 3 years. And so I think I was the only person that hadn't been on the board before that election. Yeah. And I, surprisingly enough, got enough of the votes. So,
well, I voted.
Yay! I hope you voted for me.
No, of course. Cause I remember y'all were like, it was a whole thing. Late, yeah. It was, you go vote at the city council.
Yeah, we get tacos.
It's the building that's like a mini city hall on Chicago and First. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you went across the street with your ticket to get tacos.
Yeah, you know, this year we might have some other food. So, folks, if you're from Boyle Heights, come out. We're going to have food again.
Well, that's some of the stuff I wanted to ask. You don't necessarily need to be a resident of Boyle Heights
in the election. No, not at all. So that's one of the things that I'm very, very vocal about, is being an undocumented person. And when I say I'm undocumented, it's not like, you know, when some other folks talk about being undocumented, they have DACA. That's a form of status, right? Yeah. But I have no status. I
you're legit undocumented.
I'm legit undocumented. So I hope the recording doesn't have a GPS. I don't want them to find me. But yeah, so because at the lowest form of government, that's where you see the impacts first. That's where, before any of what some of the issues that we're seeing nationally hit you at home, you're impacted by what's going on first, which is the gentrification, which is the environment that's around you that's so toxic, which is like the no parking, right? So those are some of the issues that I try and address to people, like, because I was telling people, oh, pero no tengo papeles. I'm like, that doesn't matter, because you're still a member of this community. So you can actually
live here, work here, you have fun.
And part of the work that I believe in that is that civic engagement, because the most powerful tool anyone can take away at the very least is knowledge. And knowing how the city works is powerful.
It is.
Because then you know who you can nag for getting something done.
And as folks might have, they probably hear this before in another episode, but I've been very vocal about this the last few years, especially like in the age of social media, where, you know, our council member who's currently under FBI investigation for some reason, although if you're in the neighborhood, you probably know kind of why he would be. But point aside being that, you know, using social media to like tag him when like trash cans are melting or things are happening, him, the sanitation department, or the appropriate department for whatever issue it is, they'll take that as like, holy crap, we can't be seen as like, we're not doing our job. We have to go fix this right away.
Yeah, and they're very responsive. I think that that's one of the things that social media has helped advance is political attention on issues. I remember, I would say 6 years ago, we were doing this demonstration with Endelon, and we took over the streets in Santa Monica on the LA City side. And I think it was the first time that one of the first times that like people were actively calling Obama deporter in chief, and he replied to that tweet, "I am not the deporter in chief," right? Like, so here you have our
president at the time
president, like responding to a tweet from immigrant youth, from communities on the ground. So if people don't think about communications in that way, like communications are very impactful in the way you frame it. Yeah. And it has a reach, especially if you're saying something meaningful that will resonate with people.
Also, if you say something mean.
But yeah, so one of the, those are the things that I've definitely been like very vocal about. Last year, the first time that I ran, I made a video where I outlined, like, if you don't have papers, and I did it in Spanish too, like, if you don't, even if you don't have papers, you can make yourself be counted. Like, that's really important, especially on the local level, because it is, for me, like, I've never, like, being even in this position was not something that was like, oh, I want to be in politics. It was something that, you know, I was approached, but then I saw the impact that we can cause, especially as, you know, the neighborhood is in this transition where a lot of developers want to come in. And, like, you know, I recently, someone from Protect Highland Park, or I don't remember the exact account, posted a developer was talking about a project, and the developer said, "Oh, I'm surprised that you all even understand." Or he was like,
"Oh, that video,
yeah."
And like, I thought this community was like uneducated,
something like that. And to be honest with you, I've heard that about some developers about Boyle Heights, but as a council member, I can't record him. There are recordings of some
like developers. These conversations and these meetings.
Yeah,
happening.
Like this guy was just like, "Oh, this community is an eyesore. If I put this here, developers use very."
How are you not flipping over the table?
but it also puts me in a you know, not to discredit or devalue the opinions of my fellow council members on the board, but you know, sometimes I get tired too, because I'm asking those hard questions most recently, because this is something that if this is going to be the level that I can impact as an undocumented person, trust and believe I'm going to make you work for what you're trying to do. So recently we had a presentation for Metro, and you know, Metro is doing the expansion of the river project, because after Elysian Valley, there's no access
for the bike
to the river,
path
up until Vernon. They're also going to be doing and expanding Union Station, the tunnels, because right now there's only one rail in and one rail out. And if you think about that through the lens of an environmental lens, like that's particulate matter in the air, that's more. Traffic,
more traffic. Yeah.
Right. So, but what I brought up because of the information that I've learned at my job is about AB617, which is an air quality, the air quality management district, a bill around like the quality of air in certain neighborhoods. And Boyle Heights, East LA were identified as a priority community. So in this,
because we have a lot of pollution.
We're right next to how many freeways? So as this developer is talking to us and just giving us an update, and they're going to, you know, before any project goes through, they have to do a draft EIR, environmental impact report.
Of course.
And I told him, I'm just like, well, you know, you should really hold off on trying to do any of that research, because the data around AB617 hasn't come out. And you know what he says? Like, I don't know what AB617 is. And so for me, again, like those are the moments where I actually held back, because, you know, a lot of times I do ask a lot of questions. I have a lot to say. I wait for my other council members to say something. But
are they like, oh, here goes Alessandro again?
I don't know. Maybe. But, you know, a lot of times it's also no one else is going to say anything. So for me, I'm just like, okay. And so then I'm going to raise my hand, like, and that's when I go in, and it's, you know, again, at the very least, if this is where I'm going to impact it, this is where I'm going to impact it the hardest, because our communities are constantly getting the short end of the stick. And And if our elected officials aren't going to be the ones protecting us, then this is where community has to look out for each other. That's why, like, I don't refer to it as a neighborhood council. I refer to what we do as a community council when I talk about it in public. Though, I'm on the community council. Because for me, I'm not necessarily in it for the BHNZ. I'm in it for my community. And, like, at the end of the day, like, I want my community to have my support because I want to support my community.
Yeah.
And those are the things that, like, you know, I want people to see and take away, like, when they come to our meetings. Like, it's not just, you know, maybe for some people it is about posturing themselves for a future goal or learning the intricacies because the city does offer a lot of training.
Learning Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah, or the Brown Act and things like that. But for me, it's genuinely about protecting where I live and making sure that we're not getting short-ended because people have other agendas, you know? Like, I've been very... very forward about my support for the teachers union and things like that. And we have a lot of charter schools trying to come into Boyle Heights.
Yep. So for some folks that might not be familiar with like neighborhood councils, what are like some of the responsibilities as a whole, like the council has and like some of the powers, like, cause you're talking about developers needing to come to present to the board or like to the community and, I'm assuming that's like one box of like other things that they need to do in their process.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, so the neighborhood council, we have $42,000 of discretionary funds. Per year.
Wow. That's a lot of money.
You think so? Because, I mean, we definitely do a lot, but.
I mean, it's a lot of money to me. So.
Oh, well, it is. I guess for me, because being in the neighborhood council, like and how we spend it, like. Part of that is also we are able to give neighborhood
like community grants, something yeah. along the lines of that. Or like, yeah. let's say I want to do something for the neighborhood that's going to benefit everybody.
Yeah.
I pitch it. Here's my proposal.
Yeah.
Here's my cost estimate of what everything's yes. going to take down. 8 months later, maybe I'll get it.
Yes. So we do give a lot, but we also do a lot of community improvement projects. So I don't know if folks are familiar with Blueberry Hill over there by Hollenbeck Park.
I'm not.
So, you know, a lot of people talk about the Culver City stairs. Well, we have some pretty awesome stairs here in Boyle Heights, too, that are over there by Hollenbeck on Mott. And, yeah, you should definitely take a stroll, especially now, because so part of what we did as a neighborhood council this year through the leadership of our vice president, Veronica, is we like...
Wait, this is by Roosevelt?
In that street, that's where you cross from Roosevelt to Hollenbeck.
Oh.
I think it's 6th.
Yeah.
So at the very
end. That's like a super side street.
Yeah, it's a super side street, but it's a dead end because then you have to go up those stairs. So we beautified it. We cleaned it up. Like it was during one of the Clean Streets Challenge. That was one of the areas that we had identified to clean up. Cleaned it up, but it, you know, was still lacking in a lot of visibility. And so we beautified it, we painted it, we go back every so often and we repaint it.
Yeah, because it's a dead end. I mean, yeah, just need some TLC.
And like, and believe me, like when I tell you that it's hard to get the city to
do
provide lights or do it, but you know, so with those $42,000 we create a budget which is also public, and we identify projects that we want to do. We can also do graffiti cleanup, but again, this is where I feel like we can be more creative if community was really also active in using the 311 app, because if we use our money for the graffiti, then that's less money that we can use to invest in the community when we're already paying. Like, I totally hear you when you say that your DWP bill is all in sanitation, because my light bill, like my DWP bill a month is like 200 and something.
Ouch.
What I actually use in light is $20-$30.
Yeah.
What I get charged in sewage and sanitation
yep.
is $200. So, you know, we pay into that. And that money that goes into, and if folks aren't familiar, there was also a big scam where DWP was overcharging people.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So they created the People's Power Constitution. And so we have someone that's overseeing also how DWP charges. And at least on our end, we're definitely advocating for them to go lower because, I mean, where is that money going, right? So beyond overseeing those $42,000 in community improvement projects and neighborhood improvement grants, we also oversee through PLUC, the Planning and Land Use Committee. So, as I mentioned earlier, developers come and present. Before they present to the whole board, they present to the Planning and Land Use
Committee. That's a committee, okay.
Yeah, and in that committee is really where a lot of the technical issues are discussed, the EIR. And we can't necessarily stop a project, but about 80% of the time, the council plum, the planning and land use management of the city, if the project does not have the neighborhood council's blessing, they do
not. So it's like another like a checkpoint in the system of like, well, if they're not agreeing to it, that must mean something's not right about this.
Checks and balances. For the most part, the only projects we've really seen move through are projects that are aligned with the council members' desire to gentrify a neighborhood.
What a surprise.
So yeah.
It's not shocking.
That's not shocking at all. But yeah, so a lot of times like developers do have to come and present to us and we decide whether we approve it or not. And so that's one of the most powerful committees because that's really where you influence a lot of that. And that's what really is what turns people out. Recently we had hundreds of parents because of the KIPP Super Charter School that's going to be built on 4th and Soto.
4th and Soto? Where?
Where the old hospital was.
Oh, that's right. Next to the North Gate. Yeah. I was like, what? Is like the car wash? Is the gas station?
So not right on 4th and Soto. A little bit south on Soto, past
4th.
Yes.
I was like, there's no space anywhere there for a school.
Yeah, so, you know, we didn't approve it, but WSAD did approve it.
Of course.
So, you know, you see money. You also start understanding how aligned you are with money. And so what we trained in neighborhood councils, more than anything, at the end of the day, is be a resource. But that also looks like community coming to talk to us. And
I've been in those meetings.
And you know, and a lot of times, and people will see a lot of the infighting, and that's where you'll see a lot
people
of
like to talk too. Yeah,
some people love to hear themselves talk. But yes, I think that you know we are definitely trying to be even better. Like this last, I don't know if you went to any of them, but we had 5 different forums on ballot initiatives. We want our community to be engaged. We want our community to be informed. We recently started doing our council hours where we'll pick a corner and we'll literally, different council members will show up with a desk and we'll listen to community concerns while talking to you about some of the projects.
Well, that's dope.
Yeah. So
you go where people are.
Yeah. We are trying to do, you know, one of the things that we did recently is we try to go to the areas that are heavily disinvested in, like Estrada Courts. Like, how many times do people think about Estrada Courts when they think of Boyle Heights?
Exactly. Very,
they think of that mural. We are not a minority.
Yeah.
But they don't really engage
like Mariscos Jalisco's because it's nearby.
Exactly. But people don't really go out and communicate with those communities. So
yeah.
We held one of our forums there. So we're really trying to revamp what a neighborhood council is in Boyle Heights because we want our community to be informed. We want our community to be engaged.
Damn, man. It's so much work. I know. I mean, I know other folks have offered me the same to like be part of the neighborhood council. I was like, man, I'm just going to be honest. I don't want another meeting to go to sometimes. And this is a lot of work. I mean, it is volunteer based and like hats off to you and a lot of the folks who've been committed, you know, over the years to like be in these subcommittees and then have to be at the neighborhood council meetings, which sometimes can, you know, like run lengthy hours because there's like a hot button issue that like folks need to be like talking about. And sometimes, you know, it's just like regular everyday business. It's like, can I get a yay? Can I get an A? You know, what are we going to do this weekend?
Yeah. So, I mean, I will say that it is cumbersome, but again, as I was sharing with you before we got started recording, one of my main things is if I'm not there, then who's going to ask those hard questions?
Apparently nobody.
you know, and I think, and I'm very privileged to be employed at where I'm at because it's, you know, I do get a lot of that information. Like I am by no means an environmental expert. But now having the language and knowledge of that also impacts
development. Like laws and like policies.
It's, it's insane the amount of lies that prior to being at my job that I saw developers use. You know, even with the Roosevelt redevelopment project, like they're
using, for the new building, yeah.
They're using old data. Like Boyle Heights is a community that was impacted by Exide. When you lift up dirt and when you tear down a building, like that is still lead in that.
Well, spot. They have found asbestos in it.
Yeah, among other
things. Yeah.
So, and yeah, it's definitely somewhere that I do. Like roll my eyes whenever I'm like, God, I have to be at another meeting. But if I'm not there, then I always remind myself, like, then I can complain about it later for myself.
It's true. It's true.
You know, I can be like, oh, I should have gone to that meeting.
I find myself complaining a lot. And I don't know. I mean, if the council has discussed this in any shape or form recently, but the whole thing with like the butterfly bike racks up and down First Street, mm-hmm. that was like a $12 million project. It was the bike racks. It was new benches, new metal benches, and then some new street lighting, too. I know a lot of folks, myself included, were like, what the hell is this? And then, you know, kind of like digging in the internet and asking other folks, it's like, oh, this project is from like 2010, 2011. All these designs and everything that was like worked on was approved so long ago that it's like kind of mind boggling that, wow, it took that long for all of this to just move forward and happen. Like now.
Yeah, so that's another reason we always encourage people to keep coming to our meetings, because now we have a very amazing budget advocate that keeps us informed and very knowledgeable of understanding the city budget, because that in itself is you know, when you talk about money and what you're investing in, when you create a plan that, you know, a lot of times, like, there's no money behind it.
Mm.
So you have to find the money after you create the project. So that project that might have been approved in 2010, maybe they didn't have the money until 2014, and that's when we started seeing
the bureaucracy, you know, so, of everything.
So yeah, so for us, like, you know, we get complaints around other streets. Like, we as a council, we've identified other streets that require a lot of attention, that are not also not just beyond like needing some visual improvements. Like, they're ADA inaccessible. Mm, a lot of folks that are in wheelchairs.
Sidewalks.
Yeah, and but you also have to think about like. We're in a time of climate change, and in Boyle Heights we've lost so many trees, and we have not seen them seen them be replaced. And these are cooling centers for a houseless community. These are cooling centers for the community. These are trees that are also helping us get better air where we are. So, you know, those are the things that we also, like, at least for me, like, I'm monitoring, because those are the disinvestments that we're seeing.
Yeah, that happened all along First Street. And right now it's a lot more visible right in front of the Food for Less, because they just finished taking out those trees, and they're fixing the sidewalk. And I mean, they are trying to plant new trees, but it's going to take so long for those trees to like grow up to what we mm-hmm. need them to be, if they even make it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and also understanding that, like, we're a river community, like the river is right next mm-hmm. to us, and there's wildlife. And so how are we also, you know, not saying that we need to provide for wildlife over people, but we need to understand that we live in an urban orchard. Like, there's a lot of wildlife.
There's hawks, raccoons. We ended up seeing, I don't know if you saw this, but there was like a coyote like up the street, Damien.
No, I did not.
And I know there's some in Evergreen Cemetery, but like, I was even tripping out that my girlfriend showed me the picture and it was like right on the corner.
Yeah, see, things like that are, you know, there's a lot going on. And I think that through the Neighborhood Council, we're able to at least on some level have the councilman's ear, and if not, we can take it to City Hall. You know, we can really push on some issues. Some issues are easier than others, but I think what I want people to take away, not just from this interview, but from like constant things that we meetings that we have, is the more knowledge you have is a better tool for you to be able to advocate for what you want. And that's what we're trying to really do with the neighborhood councils, is be that beacon of knowledge of access. Like, if we have access, like, what I try and do is, when if you invite me somewhere, I'm like that person that shows up with like 10 extra guests. So if the neighborhood council is being invited, you better believe that I'm going to be like, okay, well, how many community members can I take with me? Because those are the folks that you're going to hear complain, not okay. me.
So let's say if I was somebody who's very, you know, very passionate about defending my neighborhood. This sounds like the perfect place to like be in the mix of like learning what's going on and when it's happening and having a say in it.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's a perfect place, but it's a place. I think that, you know, there's different avenues and different strategies, and this is one. This is one.
Well, and it's a governing, I mean, not like something as big as like City Hall or anything, but it is something within the neighborhood.
It is something within the neighborhood. We are elected. You have to pick me. And that carries weight because people will hold you accountable to some of the things that you say and some of the things that you stand for. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, you do become more aware of, not necessarily to be careful, but you do want to be sure that you're representing your community and not yourself.
Yeah.
Though you are a member of the community, you do have to have the larger community in mind.
That's for sure. Because I think I remember was the last election was when there was like some random person, like a mujer that was running. She was like a realtor or something.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, Beatriz.
That was her name?
Yeah. She owns the Allstate.
Oh, that's right. Oh, the one right here next to the coffee shop.
Yes. She actually owns the coffee shop too.
Oh, that's right. Since we met, Atasa moved out. Dang. This is Allstate people are like just making moves all over the place. I don't think they won, right?
She did. She won and she, I don't know if it was early this year or late last year, but there was some internal issues with the council and she used to be our executive budget person. That there was some, you know, internal disagreements, and she just one day, and it wasn't even about the budget. It was about her support for policing that caused her to just get up and walk out.
Yeah, that's a very sensitive issue.
Yeah, especially in the community.
Oh, man. All right. So, speaking of elections, when are like the neighborhood council elections?
So we have elections in the spring, April 2019. I don't have the exact date off the top of my head, but if you follow my Instagram, Alessandro4BH, at Alessandro4BH on Instagram, you'll definitely see it. All the neighborhood council elections start in March, and they run each council. There are 98 neighborhood councils now in the city of LA, because there are 98 neighborhoods. Or more. Not all the neighborhoods in LA have
a council.
A neighborhood council. So if you follow my Instagram, you'll get the exact date. But I think it's April 19th. Don't quote me, but I know for sure it's April 2019.
Next year.
Next year.
You'll hear about it one way or another.
You will definitely hear about it from me. But yeah, so April 2019 is when our elections are.
Okay.
And you can vote if you live, work, or own property in Boyle Heights. You can vote for me. You can also vote for other council members if you're someone that has a vested interest. What a vested interest is if you party here or play here. Mm-hmm. So okay. If you go to any of the bars, if you go to any of the parks and things like that.
If you partake in the neighborhood.
Partake in the neighborhood.
Did the deadline to like submit, like I want to run too, already?
No, so the deadline is not out yet. So if you want to run for council, feel free. The applications are online. You can go to Empower LA and you will see the application there.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, so if maybe I should. No.
Come on, you can do it. So I encourage anybody that wants to learn and impact
involved in like what's going on in your neighborhood.
Yeah, because this is where you will firsthand get to see what projects are coming before, even if it's just to be a chismoso. This is a place to be to, like, you know.
Just be there, fill a seat, and help me quorum.
Yes, please. Help us meet quorum.
And help pick up chairs after.
Yes. We will give you pan dulce.
Do you happen by chance to know how many other folks are up for re-election to? From, like, the current council right now?
From our current board? We have some new folks. So I don't know how many are up for re-election because we had a large turnover in the past year.
Because are there term limits?
No.
Oh, so you just as long as you want to?
Oh, actually, I don't know that. I don't know that question.
Because we were talking about it and you said right now, if you get re-elected, it's every 3 years.
It's every 3 years, yes. So I don't know if there's term limits, but because apparently from what I heard, there were some council members that started when I was there that had been on the council for years.
Yeah.
So I doubt that there's term limits, but I can definitely get back to you on that. But yeah, I think that it's every 3 years. The applications are up on Empower LA. And I encourage folks that are civically minded, that want to really use this as an avenue to learn about how the policies work in the city, this is a space for you. This is definitely a strategy. It's not the only strategy, but if you're interested in what's going on in your neighborhood, even if you're not from Boyle Heights, but you're from the city of LA and you live in a neighborhood, engage with your neighborhood council, especially as neighborhoods are going through gentrification. Engage with your neighborhood council, because those are the people that are approving projects before even the council member is. Those are the people that are giving the okay and speaking for you.
That's right. Make your voice heard. So we just went through all of that with like the elections like last week. So
yes.
Yeah. So is there a specific seat that you're running for? I know there's like a president, vice president.
Yeah. So right now we're just going for the board. I will be running for the chair of the transportation and environment again in 2019. I think that now I'm at a more, I got have a stronger grasp at the seat as opposed to before. And I have more time, considering all the things that I do.
You're not in flux right now.
I'm not in flux.
Things are more like in place. And you got your routine.
I will definitely take my dog to the meetings. You'll get to meet my dog.
That's awesome.
But yeah, you know, and for me in particular, some of the things, just to give folks a sense of who I am, not just as a person, but as a candidate. You know, when I ran in 2016, a lot of the issues that I really wanted to bring to the forefront is, as a queer person, like, we are never talked about. We use the word community a lot. So yeah, I'm a member of the community, but what community? Because there's also like within community, there's community, right? Mm-hmm. And so I definitely wanted to uplift that Boyle Heights is rich in also LGBTQ culture. Me, along with Queen Victoria Ortega, who is an open trans woman from
I met her. She did her presentation at my job. Number one, they're amazing. But two, you know, like some more neighborhood. I heard she's running for Weezer seat.
You heard it here first, folks. So I'm a big supporter of Queen Victoria Ortega. What she's been, if there's anyone that rides hard for Boyle Heights, is this woman.
Yeah.
She's a powerhouse. She is unstoppable. And I've never seen any Queen Victoria Ortega not take on something that she can't do. And so it was her, Angel Martinez, and myself. We were really active in really developing a queer LGBTQ East Side voice, especially in the age of you know, what happened in Florida, Pulse. We had a vigil here. I was one of the organizers of it. We had a march when the larger one happened that started in Boyle Heights, where a lot of people, we just marched, took over the street and like marched from Boyle Heights. So, as I have now been on the board, I think that my queer and undocumented identity are never going to leave me. One of the things now that some of the things that I'm really hoping to address in this new next term is the environment, our need to really reevaluate our health as through the lens of environment, the quality of air that we have, the quality of water that we have.
The contaminated soil, like everywhere we go,
all of that. And I think, and you know, our public education system, I think that we are very quick to judge our teachers, but we're not really quick to see why there's billionaires investing in education that have no background in the education system.
They're just turning it into profit.
They're turning our schools into profit. So we really need to, so, you know, I stand firmly with our teachers union in understanding that those are the folks that we also need to invest in, because those are the folks that we're trusting our children with.
Yeah.
And, you know, also the intersection of all of that. So again, bringing forward my queer identity, my undocumented identity, those are the things that I want to bring and uplift while I'm up there, because when they talk about projects, they're not talking about who the projects are for. And a lot of times these projects aren't for recognizing the history of LGBTQ people on the East Side. I don't know if folks are familiar, but Boyle Heights had one of the first lesbian bars on the East Side, and that's still there.
A gem.
Yeah, that's so underappreciated. So And now if you all want to learn more about me, you can follow me at Alessandro4BH on Instagram.
Alessandro4BH, no underscore anything, all one word.
No underscore, all one word. Alessandro4BH.
You heard it here first. Follow him. If you want to support him, you know, come out in the spring next year, sometime in April. Hopefully by then we'll have a set date.
Yes. But also, I'll be having a couple of Meet the Candidates. So, I will be having a couple of opportunities for folks to also just get to know me as a person, as someone from the hood, you know, someone that I know that I've heard from people when they first see me that I look like, they can't talk to me. But I'm like definitely one of those people. I describe myself as someone with a doña mentality. I like to cook for people as
bring
an
them
elder.
Together.
Yeah, I remember the first time I was referred to as an elder by someone. I'm just like, hold on, I'm only 36, yo. Like, but you know, in action, I prove my doña-ness. I wake up, make my cafecito, put on some cumbias.
Yeah, and,
you know. But I think that I want to give people a sense of when you vote for me, you're also voting for yourself. Because again, when you invite me somewhere, I'm going to bring people with me. And that's really what I want people to also understand, that this isn't, neighborhood councils are also an opportunity for you to build community.
Of course. You know, maybe not the kind of community you're thinking sometimes, but the space is there.
The space is there. Come see us every last Wednesday of the month.
That's what I was going to ask.
Our neighborhood council meetings are every fourth Wednesday of the month. We have a neighborhood council meeting.
What time and where?
Our meetings start at 6:15, and they go, hopefully we get through the agenda 9, but sometimes a little longer. And they are at Boyle Heights City Hall at the corner of First and Cummings.
Yeah, there's parking there. Sometimes.
There's parking sometimes.
But if you ever do go to a council meeting, don't park across the street at the library.
Do not, because they close at 8 and they will lock your car.
They lock your car in there.
Yes, it's happened.
And then y'all are pretty good about like having coffee and snacks.
We do. We have coffee and snacks. We realize that if we're going to ask you to stay there, we're going to try and feed you.
Get some conchitas.
Conchitas, cafecito from your local coffee shop. But one thing we also have is we also have government reports. So even if folks come for the beginning of it, we have reports from WISAR's office, Miguel Santiago's office, our other representatives who will recently be Maria Elena Durazos.
Yeah, for Senate.
Yeah, I was definitely a big supporter of Maria Elena. So.
Okay. No, dope. See, so there you go. You can like stay up to date with what's happening locally, you know, statewide, kind of nationally a little bit.
Yes.
But every fourth Thursday?
Wednesday.
Every fourth Wednesday of the month, 6:15
to
9-ish at the Boyle Heights City Hall on First and Chicago. Free parking in the back, free snacks as well. Is there anything else that you would like folks to know? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, shout out to East Yard. That's my work fam. They're definitely super supportive of everything. And I learned so much of why I'm able to impact the neighborhood council now.
It's a trip. It's a trip. I've like at my job been doing the same, like about with like the carbon tax, you know, AB 32, the stupid ass. We were just talking about it. Greenhouse tax.
Oh, the greenhouse gas
reduction fund.
Yeah.
The oh my god, I got really pissed off a while back because Metro took $30 million of that money that was supposed to go to like other projects to put bike share at USC, and I was like, why isn't everybody as mad as I am?
I mean, Cristina Garcia, who wrote the battery tax bill, that tax was finally starting to generate money. Well, y'all's governor, trifling ass Jerry Brown, took the money that was already generated, and he's like, all right, I'm taking, this is the payback. And everyone assumed that the money he had given to DC TSC for cleanup was like from the state. He's like, nah, it's a loan.
Oh.
And he took it from the battery tax.
Wow.
Yeah. So
the things that go under the radar because you're not going in the neighborhood council.
Yeah. These are the things. And you can approach me at any given moment after 3 p.m. You can find me walking somewhere in Boyle Heights with my beautiful baby Venus, my pit bull, and Lobo. And you can engage with me.
Talk to me. Walk the dog.
Walk with me. Walk with my dog. But yeah.
All right. And then East Yard is having a toxic tour bike ride.
At East Yard, we will be having a toxic tour next Sunday, starting
November 18th,
starting at Civic Center in East LA. And we will be biking from Civic Center to Long Beach. We will have multiple stops where you'll be able to learn about hotspots of toxicity. You'll be able to learn historic moments in the environmental justice movement. And you'll be able to get some bomb-ass food. Our organizers are dope in ensuring that our community is fed. And if you've never biked before, don't trip. We got you. This is not a race. We are very mindful of folks getting tired. We are very mindful of the fact that different riding levels. We provide some helmets. If you get there early enough, we got some bikes that we put on loan for the event itself. So come join us. We also have our Giving Tuesday. Everyone has Giving Tuesday, but give to ECR because we're, you know, we're a little cool.
That's right. You know,
November 27th is Giving Tuesday.
No, I was going to say, aside from Giving Tuesday, y'all have a fundraiser.
Oh, yes. Our Planting Seeds of Change. So Planting Seeds of Change is our year-end fundraiser. It's not even a fundraiser. It's our member appreciation brunch that just so happens to turn into a fundraiser because we get some pretty dope prizes from local community businesses, from other places. So just to give y'all a taste, we get baskets and we are full of stuff. So last year, Espacio 1839, shout out to Nico and Mayra. They gave us a $100 gift card. We paired that with some painting from Chicano Soul.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, Chicano Soul. And something else in there. We had a family 4-pack to Disneyland. We have
Disneyland. I bought the Taste of Italy basket.
Taste of Italy basket. So and don't be scared to, if you don't got no funds, all of our baskets start at $20. So you may go home with a Taste of Italy for $20.
Yeah. I did not take it for $20, but that's not the point.
That's not why the point. I did it. Yes.
You know, last year was very good to me. So I was like, all right, I need to like kick it down somewhere.
No, and we really appreciate it. So that dinner, again, if you go on our website, you'll see the tickets start. If you're an Easter Egg member, which means if you've engaged with us, the tickets start at $12-$15. Other than that, the ticket is $40, which basically pays for itself. If you've never been to Tamayo's restaurant, it's a beautiful restaurant. And the way they decorate it for Christmas is in itself just like... If you're into that kind of thing, that's definitely the space for you.
You get a meal, and it's not like a rubber chicken dinner.
It's not a rubber chicken dinner. It's really good food.
And they have alcohol.
So
you get a margarita.
come on down, join us. Follow at EYCEJ to also learn about the messed up shit that our government agencies are doing to you, mm-hmm. and how to hold them accountable, and become a member.
That's right. Follow them on the Twitters, on the Insta, on the Facebook.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm really going to go try to make it to the bike ride. But it's kind of difficult because it does end in Long Beach. It's like trying to figure my way back home. It's like, how do I do this?
Yeah. So what we usually have is people go up to a certain length or join at a certain length and then just go.
It's like, all right, this is where like I'm going to go catch the blue line or something. But yeah. I'm thankful that maybe I can just call somebody up and be like, hey, come pick me up.
Yeah. I unfortunately will not be here because I have another work commitment. So
yeah, you'll be there in spirit.
I will definitely be there in spirit, and I'm actually working with one of our organizers to create a virtual trip. They're gonna have a GoPro, and I'm gonna use Google Maps to wherever we stop, and so I'm gonna have different angles being recorded.
Can I show you something right now?
Yeah,
hand me my backpack. Out? Yeah, no, it's because I'm always thinking of ways to do. Like new things differently, right? So, pendejo, I don't have it in this bag. Anyways, I don't know if you've seen on my social media post where I do like a 360 view of things. Mm-hmm. So I have a 360 camera. So for your idea, that's the kind of thing where it's perfect.
Yeah.
Because like the 360 camera is a 360 degree view of what you're doing. So I've been like really playing around with it, and I've been playing around with it just to get down like the technical aspects and limitations of what I can and can't do with it and how to work with it, because it's very intensive in terms of like it's a lot of data. So that means I have to have a big memory card on the camera itself. Mm-hmm. And then I have to manage that in my computer because I can edit it in like iTunes and whatever. Not iTunes.
iPhoto.
No, the one that where you added photo. I mean, video. Final Cut. I use that shit almost every other one. Point being,
yes,
is that that's the kind of stuff like I want to do. So, I mean, we can talk about this. I mean, I'm gonna try. That's what my idea was gonna be for the bike ride. Is not like to necessarily let y'all know that I was doing this, just to do it on my own, just to be like, hey, look what I did. Mm-hmm. Surprise.
We love surprises.
But yeah, but you know, very much that like you can't be there. So how can we bring this experience to other folks so they can experience it?
Well, especially because, you know, folks that can't be there are, we also use this as a tool for education. Like a lot of people don't know that environmental justice movement started here and on the east side, you know, started with mothers of East LA, Santa Isabel, mm-hmm. and like them stopping the prison that was going to be built in East LA.
Then the, like the work they did later with Father Greg Boyle.
Yeah. So, you know, there's historical markers that I'm very big on, like, yes, it's great to idolize people or find heroes outside of your community, but we got heroes in our community too, mm-hmm. doing this everyday work.
Exactly. Speaking of which, if you're listening to this, Mark, just know that you're one of the folks I want to have on the show too. So you can expand more on this as well.
Yes, Mark is definitely
when he's not traveling like to China or like to other places, Korea. To hold it down. You know, we can find like an hour or two to sit down and like talk. So
get him on that.
So there you go. They have a fundraiser coming up. They have the Toxic Tour bike ride coming up, and you know there's going to be more work coming in 2019. You know, a lot of this work tends to like die down toward the end of the year, just because you know it's the Thanksgiving.
We got lives too.
Yeah, it's you know Christmas days, and we're just not thinking about that right now. So yes. We gotta like recharge your batteries, get some self care in. And, like, start 2019. Like, hit the ground running, ready to go one more time.
Yes.
So, yeah, is there anything else?
That's it on my end.
Cool.
Follow me, Alessandro4BH.
Alessandro4BH.
Tweet at me, too. I love responding to Twitters, so.
So there you go. Thanks again for inviting me for the time. And this has been another episode of Audible Heights. We'll catch y'all later.